All right, welcome into another riveting episode of That's
So Cincinnati.
Jason Williams, along with co-host Sherry Coolidge and executive producer Silent Phil. I was going to call you by your real name, but you're only known as Silent Phil here as he smiles at me.
No one can know my true identity.
Oh, wait, he speaks.
Are you in the Christmas spirit, Phil?
A little bit.
Merry Christmas, everyone. Merry Christmas, Silent Phil. And speaking of the Christmas spirit, we have an exciting guest this week, none other than conductor of the Cincinnati Pops, John Morris Russell. Looking forward to having him come in and discuss all the exciting things that are going on around Music Hall and around the Pops. And he's just such an exciting guy, and his energy and his passion for what he does and for this city are unparalleled. So looking forward to bringing him in here in a few minutes. But before that, Sherry, let's jump to the news of the week. And you are fresh off a trip to New York.
I look more glamorous than normal?
I don't know. You always look very glamorous, so it's hard to say more than normal because you're always on top of your game.
I did go to New York City for work,
and you brought back some. You had a huge interview and some big news. Can you talk about that?
I did. FC Cincinnati, the day before Thanksgiving, broke some huge news. I believe for both the team and the city, they announced that Meg Whitman. She's a Silicon Valley star billionaire. She got her start here with Procter & Gamble, where she's still on the board. But she went on. She was the CEO of eBay during its formative years. And so if you buy things on eBay, you can thank Meg Whitman for making it what it is. It's just absolutely incredible. Like, that is her legacy. And she's, you know, been at some other of our major companies.
Hewlett Packard.
Yes, and she's starting a new streaming service for mobile phones, but she is a minority investor in the team. But when we say minority, we're going to throw out the number, $100 million investment in FC Cincinnati. It's absolutely incredible.
What is it that made her, what did she see in this club, in this organization that wanted to make her invest $100 million?
You know, first of all, she could not have been more effusive about this city. And, you know, she talked about what it was like when she was an assistant brand manager, you know, several years ago.
And back in the late 70s?
Yes. And she said, you know, over the Rhine was a place you didn't go. And now when she comes back for Procter board meetings, she stays at 21C and she's just watched it grow. And she said this whole city, she's just absolutely impressed of where it's going. And she feels like this city's worth an investment. And additionally, she is all in on Major League Soccer. This is actually, I should say, her whole family, herself and her husband, who's a neurosurgeon in California, are actually the named owners. But this is really a Whitman family thing with Meg Whitman herself is going to sit on the board of governors for Major League Soccer next to Carl Linner III.
Wow.
But so she's Carl Linner III. He said yesterday there's a press conference and after coming back from New York City, and he just said, you know, I plan to be the owner for a very long time. I invested in this because I enjoy it. I like it. And I think that this is, you know, where I want to be. And so this is long term. And he said, one of my favorite phrases, he's like, ultimately, the buck stops with me. But she is just going to be there offering advice. She called Major League Soccer, it's like the ultimate startup. She likened it to like eBay in its early years. She just feels like there's so much growth potential for the sport. And she was like, this is where I want to be right now.
How did she then get connected with the FC Cincinnati ownership group? And how did that all, do you know how that all came about?
Well, this Major League Soccer team, I think, you know, we're so used to what we're seeing, you know, with like all of these fans, and we talk about the stadium all the time. You know, this is a very unique thing. Not all soccer stadiums, and we're going big and we're going best. And so this is a $250 million stadium, the training facility, $30 million, both are more expensive than the team was even originally going to do. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they paid this franchise fees to become part of it. I mean, the team is valued at $500 million right now. And so her investment is really going to help this capital side of things.
They, I mean, for when you see Meg Whitman and Carl Lindner and the Farmer family and the Joseph family, these are very smart business people. And when they're investing this kind of money into this league, you know, they see something that maybe the rest of us don't see, and they see down the road. And certainly when you think about Major League Soccer, I think you can already say that Cincinnati, even 1 year into MLS, one season in, though it didn't go well on the field, everything else around this franchise, they are the now the envy of this league. They're going to raise the bar in this league. And what you would hope is that other investors for other teams raise their bar as well. And then the quality of soccer then all the way around becomes at a higher level. You know, there's a lot of criticism in the soccer world of Major League Soccer, you know, across the world that, you know, I've heard people say it's AAA soccer. But I think when you see the Meg Whitmans of the world and you know, come in and invest that kind of money, you know, again, it's going to make this something way bigger than what it is and what it has been.
You know, and this, we're talking about, you know, this woman who's hailed as being one of the smartest women in the world with the idea, you know, and she just comes, you know, with this fortune that she built herself. And she's coming to Cincinnati. She's not going to live here. She's still going to live in California. She's still having a company that's a startup in California, but she cares about this city. And I think this is going to be a game changer to introduce, you know, a woman like Meg Whitman into the power structure of this city, who, by the way, couldn't be nicer. She was just so chatty and friendly. I have to say, I was a little bit nervous. The sit-down was with her, Carl Lindner III, and Jeff Birding. And I don't get nervous before interviews too often. But, you know, I didn't know what this was going to be like. And I was a little bit intimidated. And it was like having a conversation with friends. And honestly, herself and Carl Lindner III, they were talking about a brunch at his house. And she was, you know, talking about his wife, Martha. And you could tell there's just such a love. There's like a friendship that's building there, too. Yeah. I think they have some grand ambitions for what this is going to mean for this city.
Is part of her interest, too, is not just the team itself, but what is going on, you know, with the stadium and around the stadium as well, that the team is not just building a stadium, but they're wanting to build really an entire entertainment district and, you know, business district around that stadium.
They've been very tight-lipped on that. And don't worry, I ask on a regular basis for more details. We just saw some planning commission documents come through where, you know, you can start to see them scooping up a little bit of the land adjacent to the stadium. And I feel like, you know, we're really heading that way. They are talking about bars and restaurants and that kind of zoning and these new documents that are coming through. And all of the hints are really, really there for some sort of development to come around it, which if you think about it, you know, it's just west of Over the Rhine. It's north of the banks. We're just really going to have these corners of our city with, you know, these destination places.
I fully expect it to be, knowing how this franchise, and starting at the top with Mr. Lindner, you know, I fully expect this to be the envy of the American soccer world, and it's just going to be all out and fantastic.
They don't do anything halfway. We've met all of these people before, and you know, I mean, Jeff Birding and himself has talked about the team. There's plans to win. You know, there's an understanding and a responsibility for what happened. He's talked about this with the Inquirer soccer reporter, you know, several times. Pat Brennan, we should give a shout out to him, actually covers soccer. And, you know, I wrote just some businessy parts of this over the weekend.
If you haven't read Sherry's coverage and an interview with Meg Whitman, just go on Cincinnati.com in the right-hand corner. There's a search queue and just search Meg Whitman and Sharon Coolidge, or Sharon Coolidge, and all her recent stories will pop up, and you'll see. You not only sat down with her last week in New York, but you also covered her press conference here early this week in Cincinnati.
Big story coming tomorrow about some things related to the business side of the team too. So kind of watch for that.
Tomorrow, is that as in Thursday?
Wednesday morning or Thursday morning? Okay. I'd say what it was, but you never know with the planning.
Let's shift gears and, wait, you're going to say something else, Sherry?
No, I'm good. You know,
what?
Nope. I stayed in New York City for a little bit.
Oh, yes. Yes. How'd that go?
Well, if you're in New York City at Christmas time and then you're done working, you got to, you know.
It's magical.
It was magical.
Did you go to Rockefeller Plaza to see the tree?
I absolutely did. I went to see the Rockettes.
Oh, really?
And it was very, yeah, I did. Did the Christmas time things kind of checked off the boxes. I've been to New York City before, but not at Christmas. And I really wanted to see what it was all about. And I think, and I enjoyed it. And it was everything that I thought it would be. However, there was a lot of people. And I can stand crowds since I'm a shopper. But it was a lot. And it made me, and this is so Cincinnati. I know, I'm sorry, but it's true. really appreciate Fountain Square. And our Christmas tree there, and our ice skating rink there, and I went when we got back, and kind of walked around. There's little shops, and I had lunch at Via Vitae, Santa Claus, and we just did it up, and it was busy and bustling in the most amazing way. You were not bumping into somebody like at every time you turned around.
Was it? Could you even get close to the Christmas tree in New York?
Well, I mean, with my type A self, we were good there. But it was no easy task. And I was alone. And, like, you know, tons of people, you know, had their children with them. This was real events. And everybody was in a very good mood and very sweet. And it wasn't like, you know, anything that you hear about New Yorkers or whatever. But it was still a lot. And it was just a lot of people.
Okay. Now, anything else?
Well, no, because I've been in my own. I took a news quiz on Sunday night, like from like a week in review news quiz. And I usually do very well on those. I'm an avid reader of the news. I did terrible this week. I've been in my own FC Cincinnati, Meg Whitman, New York City world. And so I got to start paying attention to the news again.
Where do you take those news quizzes at?
On the New York Times.
Oh, okay. I guess check out the New York Times weekly news. Is that a weekly thing? Weekly
it is. They post it on the weekend. And it's, you know, because it's a kind of overview of all of like the national news of the week. It's a good way to kind of catch up, I think.
Gotcha.
Also, I will give a shout out to the mini crossword in the New York Times. I love the mini. That's a big thing around here. Dan and Hannah do the mini together every day, and I do it at night by myself. It's little topical fun questions.
Anything else? I'm just sitting here. I'm shaking. I'm so eager to get to our guest.
But okay,
I also want I want you to share if you have anything else
like
to
share. Am I oversharing? I feel like I'm oversharing.
No, he's shaking his head no. Silently shaking his head no.
Have you taken the kids to see Santa yet?
We have not. Well, I take that back. Now I am going to be oversharing, and you're going to, hopefully you don't laugh at this.
I would never laugh at you.
Took our kids to see Santa at Bass Pro Shop.
That
walked
is
right up, no line.
Awesome.
Got a good
That's
picture.
Awesome.
We're actually going back to my hometown this weekend, and my hometown has started this sort of mini Cincinnati Zoo Festival of Lights kind of thing. I mean, it's like a festival of lights in the park, and it's become this really big thing in Southeast Ohio where people from all over that region come to it. And it's a cool thing because it's really exemplary of how my hometown has bounced back after the recession. And you walk through it, and it's very magical. And it's hard to describe, but just the amount of people who have put the time and effort into it, the businesses, the volunteers. So we're really looking forward to that. And then Santa will be at that. And that's going to be, I think, our big time to see Santa, because you can see Santa in Cincinnati, New York, or little tiny Gallipolis.
Absolutely. 11-year-old Jack. He's coming around to the idea of his big question was, I just don't understand. One year he's at the mall. Another year he's at the park. Sometimes he's at Fountain Square. And I was like, do you think that's possible? And I got a yes, and I let it go.
Okay, good. Yeah, I guess that time is probably coming for you, though, isn't it?
Next year, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that was a sad, sad reality check for 17-year-old Jason.
I know, we enjoyed it.
Oh, you didn't catch my joke, did you?
For 7-year-old Jason?
17-year-old Jason.
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Do we have a drum roll, Phil?
I need to get that.
Okay. We don't have a drum roll. He's got every other gadget and noise in there, but not a drum roll. Before we shift to John Morris Russell, I want to say this. We're shaking it up a little bit this week. We're going to finish this episode out with our interview with John Morris Russell because he has a really special treat coming up at the end of the episode. So stick with us. Sherry, your eyes are widening.
I know what the treat is. Okay. But what I was thinking there was, I know everyone always listens to the end, but just in case not, this time is a good time to listen to the end.
It's really special. And so we want to get out of the way of that and not, you know, what he says is saying at the end here, what we're going to ask him to say at the end here is really cool. So before we jump to that, I want to say we're going to discuss all the upcoming concerts and events with Cincinnati Pops. And so, you know, we'll be throwing out dates and times and all that, but make sure you go to CincinnatiSymphony.org to check all those events and those exact times and schedules, and for ticket information and to purchase your tickets, CincinnatiSymphony.org. And also thanks to – this was a quick thing that came about really quickly. So thanks to Frank Mercurio, the Director of Communications over the Cincinnati Symphony, for making this happen in a 24-hour period here. So without further ado, let's jump to the one and only John Morris Russell. All right, special guest segment time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. Our today's special guest is none other than Grammy-nominated Cincinnati Pops conductor, John Morris Russell.
Yo! it's fantastic to be here.
We're glad to have you. Thanks. This is the crazy time of year for you, and we appreciate you taking a half hour out of your schedule to come and sit down with us. And
my absolute
It's great
pleasure.
To see you.
Yeah.
Are you asking everyone now to put Grammy nominated when they refer to you before your name?
Well, you know what, that's a nice thing about this whole thing is that for the rest of my life I'll make sure to have Grammy nominated before, and I think an obit in the New York Times, you know.
Yes. Well, as we're talking about the Grammy nomination, this just was announced last week that American Originals 1918, which came out last year, has been nominated for a Grammy. Your first Grammy nomination of your long, distinguished career?
My very first one. It's the sixth Grammy nomination for the Pops.
Okay.
And it's kind of tricky. The Pops is funny, you know? I mean, it's its own kind of unique sound world. And yet there isn't really a Grammy category specifically for it, you know? I mean, you got jazz, and you got country, and you got hip-hop. You have all these different categories, but there isn't one for Pops orchestras. So we get lumped in together with symphony orchestras doing, Mahler symphonies, Beethoven, you know, Brahms, opera, the whole nine yards. And so we kind of find that sometimes we just there's not a niche. Yeah. And we found one this time. It was Best Classical Compendium, which is a collection of music. And it's really I got to tip the hat to the Grammy nominating committee, because this one is so eclectic, right? It has some jazz. It has some early kind of country folk, bluegrassy type stuff. It's got a little bit of Broadway. It's all kind of American music making that tells a real story about, like, who we are.
And it's the music that came out of after World War I.
Right. Well, we knew we had this concert in 2017, and we were going to be recording it live, and we knew it was going to be released in 2018. Mm-hmm. And so we said, well, we kind of thought about it. And said, 100th anniversary of the end of the First World War. So we said, oh, this is fantastic. It can be all kind of patriotic, great, great American music. But we instead of kind of looking backwards to the end of a war and lots of saber rattling and, you know, rah, 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 what we wanted to do is say, let's take that date instead of looking backwards, we look forward.
Yeah.
What happened after the war? And I think to me, one of the most significant aspects of the war was the fact it was the first time African Americans were engaged in a really big way by the U.S. Army. There were, oh, gee whiz, I think more than 250,000 African-Americans serving in some way. Most of it was scut work. But for nearly 40,000 troops, they were in active duty. They were in the trenches fighting the Central Powers. They all, like all regiments, had a musical component, but they weren't playing John Philip Sousa marches, baby. They had their own sound.
Yeah.
And it was a sound that was kind of born of African-American music traditions in the United States, which no one really paid much attention to in our society outside of the African-American community. But as soon as those bands started playing in Paris, man, the French people woke up and said, holy mackerel, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. So literally, these guys in the Harlem Hellfighter 369th Regiment and the Black Devils Harlem Regiments, man, they had guns fighting the Central Powers during the day, and they were playing the jazz clubs in Paris at night. I mean, there's got to be a movie about this. It is extraordinary, and from that sense of empowerment of literally fighting for respect in the United States. And getting all of this love from European audiences who it was said that all of France had caught ragtimeitis thanks to James Reese Europe and his Harlem Hellfighters. And they came back to the United States in 1919 with this deep respect for themselves and their art form, which then just exploded when it hit the United States once again. And it opened up the doors to the jazz age, which changed everything.
So wow. You recorded this live at Music Hall.
That's right.
How nerve-wracking is that? You know they're recording. You can't just stop. And
well, I tell you what. You know, you always surround yourself with great people. And our Cincinnati Pops, our musicians, our staff, our crew, the entire 5-4 production that was recording this. I mean, these guys and gals are all at the very, very top of their craft. And so in a lot of ways, you feel so well supported up there that, you know, you just go for it, right? And add on to that, you know, you've got the best music fans on earth, our Pops fans, and, you know, you're feeling all of this energy and love from the audience. And I really hadn't done a lot of live recordings. I think we had done one prior to that. And that energy from the hall really translates in the recording.
What your first Grammy nomination of your career? Where were you at last week when you heard the news, and what was your reaction like?
I was just getting back from Hilton Head. We just did a concert, the Franck D Minor Symphony and the Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto, and I was at the Savannah Airport. You know, like, you know, crazy. You know,
yeah.
Getting there just in time. You know, going through line and
That's
all.
How
the rest.
I go to airports.
Exactly right. You know, So my phone is just buzzing off the hook, and I just keep on just instinctively just like pressing it, you know, call you back later, call back later, you know, text, and it was just like, what the heck? So finally get to the gate, and I'm about to get in, and, you know, I start looking in, and I just see all of this line of text messages and emails, you know, congratulations,
wow.
Et cetera, and I was just, it was awesome. So on board the plane, there was my whole row of people. Man, I was buying champagne for everyone. We were having a great party.
Really?
All the way back to Cincinnati.
I love it.
Wow. Did you choke up a little bit?
No, not really. I was just like more like just like totally jazzed, right?
Yeah.
Still am.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you have time to like savor that? Or what is your rehearsal schedule like? You're coming into the busiest weekend there is.
Right. Well, it's just like everything has come in at once, right? So, and I do holiday concerts all over the place. So last week in Hilton Head, of course, or the week before in Hilton Head, we had our Lollipop Snowman concert this week, and of course, Holiday Pops and this weekend. And I'm off to Buffalo after that. So it's a very, very busy time. It's also planning time for all of next season as well. So we're right in the middle of that. Also getting ready for our real Big Pop Spectacular at the very first weekend of February, a tribute to George Gershwin with Marcus Roberts on piano and all these great orchestral classics written by George Gershwin. So you add on top of that the Grammys, and it's just, you know, you just live it. they say it's not a job, it's a lifestyle.
You conduct orchestras in Buffalo, Hilton Head,
and of course here, this is home.
And here, obviously,
I'm the conductor laureate of the Windsor Symphony Orchestra, where I spent many, many years, and then I do a fair amount of guest conducting all over the country.
Do you have a favorite child? No, just kidding.
Well, Cincinnati, of course, this is home, and you know what? Really, our orchestra is so amazing and flexible. And, you know, it really is kind of a shame that more of our musicians or people around don't have the opportunity to go elsewhere, because oftentimes when you go, especially to bigger markets, and you go out there and you're working with other orchestras, you know, they're very good, but they can't touch us in terms of the flexibility and the virtuosity and this great feeling, there's something about the music making here that is such a joyous experience. Everyone on stage, really, there's this great sense of mutual respect. We call it our Cincinnati Pops family, and it really is a family.
Is that a standard life for a conductor to be the conductor of a handful of orchestras?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Louis Langres, the music director of our Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, he works a lot in Paris, in New York during the summer at the Mostly Mozart Festival. He does a lot of guest conducting as well. So every once in a while, we'll bump into each other there at CVG. It's fantastic.
In an airport. Is it just a crazy life in a season like this where you're going back and forth between different cities and how do you manage all that?
Well, you know, it comes bit by bit. Yeah. So as you kind of develop into your career and more things happen, you learn how to balance these things and to figure it out. I've always kind of had this general rule of thumb. I hope I'm not getting too much into the weeds here, but
oh, no.
It's usually about 3 weeks on, 1 week off. So in any given month, I'll be doing a concert here. I'll have a concert in Hilton Head. And then about every other month, I'll have a concert in Buffalo. And then in between, there are, you know, various guest conducting things. I just did Pittsburgh this year, Toronto, Vancouver. I'm oftentimes there. And so it'll be like I'll have 3 weeks of working and zipping about. But then I always make sure that I've got a week at home, you know, spend with time, of course, with the family and all of our friends here, but also raking the leaves, which is a very important thing you got to do every couple of weeks.
Apparently, everyone has a honey-do list. I'll let my husband Alex know, and I know Jason has one. Sometimes when I call him, he's working on that list.
Big month, big stretch here. Holiday Pops, New Year's Eve concert.
Harry Potter is Harry now Harry Potter is completely sold out, eh? Yeah. Anyway,
right, and there's a few tickets left. I'm told for Sunday.
For Sunday's Holiday Pops. Yes. And you know what? Do call if you really want to go, do call the box office, because, you know, with a hall of 2,400, there are always, you know, some people who will return a ticket or something will come up. And
I adjust my tickets every single time.
And the thing is, there are always a couple of spare seats. So if you really want to go see the show, call up the box office, and they're going to try to find some way to be able to get you in there. And then the big concert is at the beginning of February. And again, you should, folks, get these tickets early. It's for our Gershwin celebration with the great Marcus Roberts, fantastic jazz pianist who will be playing the Rhapsody in Blue, everyone's favorite piano concerto. But instead of the written cadenza, all the solo piano bit, he improvises it. And so it's a whole new twist on the music of George Gershwin. It really kind of contemporizes it and makes it into a fluid living experience. It's a fantastic a performance. And he's done it with a few orchestras around. But this is going to be the very first time here in Cincinnati. And we're also going to be doing American in Paris and music from Porgy and Bess and the I Got Rhythm Variations for Violin and Orchestra. I mean, it's really George Gershwin's greatest hits, and there's no other orchestra that can play Gershwin like our Cincinnati Pops.
And during the Gershwin Spectacular, when that comes around in, early February?
Right, first weekend of February.
That'll be a couple weeks after the Grammy.
Either tempos will be too fast or too slow.
So you will be introduced as Grammy Award-winning conductor.
Yeah, that's right.
Keep that thought, man. I love you.
Because that coming up on CBS on January 26th will
that's
be
right.
the Grammy
So awards. That's the... I believe it's 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, the evening broadcast. It's just like the top 5-10 awards or something. You know, it's all the big ones, you know, that everyone, you know,
so will you,
knows
will you,
about.
Will you so be there? Will you?
I will be there. But prior to that, there is the big ceremony where the other 75 awards are going to be given out, of which, you know, we're up for. And of course, Cincinnati Symphony is up for one as well. And so that has a live web cast, okay. which anyone can access. And so that's, you know, where we find out if we walk away with a statue. And then in the evening, everyone from that earlier show comes and going to, at the Staples Center for the big ceremony. So, and I guess there's a special zone, I guess, for all the nominees and such.
Okay.
So it, which is fairly close to the front. So,
wow.
I'll be the one with the red jacket on.
I was going to ask, are you wearing? I mean, because it seems like you can wear anything to the Grammys, right?
Well, you know what's funny? There are on the invitation, it says, you know, black tie. You know, you know, but of course, you know, all those rock and rollers
That's
always breaking
right.
breaking the rules. So this has been very exciting. So Christmas time, I'm going with my wife and doing lots of dress shopping while I just pull out my tux.
Oh, okay. You are known for your red jacket. How did that start?
Well, it's a tradition that goes along with the Cincinnati Pops. And Eric Hunsell was very, very close with Louise Nippert, who, when she owned the Reds, they wanted to create some sort of connection, a citywide kind of color motive. Branding, I guess we'd call it.
Yes, this is Cincinnati lore. I feel we should have known, but this is why we have to
keep
repeating
it. This is so Cincinnati.
There you go, right? And so the red jackets are emblematic of our Pops, but also Cincinnati and what brings us all together. So there you
have
it.
How many do you have?
I actually have two. I have the one that I go out in public, which is nice, form-fitting, looks really great, sharp.
It does look sharp.
But then there's the one I conduct in, and the sleeves have got to be a little longer and it's got to be a little looser because as I'm, you know, reaching around and pointing and all the rest, you know, I'd absolutely bust out of my other one. So this one's got a little bit more give to it.
Was this your, speaking of Eric, was this your dream job? Because I was watching the announcement on YouTube of you being announced. And, you know, it did have, of course, its sad moments because he's no longer with us and how it came to be. But then there's this happy moment where you're announced. Was this your dream?
It was very special. I think when I was starting in my career, I never even would have thought about conducting a Pops orchestra and being in Pops. I mean, I'm crazy about jazz. When I was in high school, college, I played in a jazz band. I played in a garage band in high school. We did Chicago and Earth, Wind, and Fire covers. Oh, man, we were bad. I mean, literally.
I don't believe that, but all right.
Anyway.
Growing up in Cleveland, by the way.
That's right.
Your hometown.
Right on. And so, but you know what? Growing up in Cleveland, the thing is that, you know, we'd have a dance gig or something with our rock band, and then, you know, we would think nothing of going to hear the Cleveland Orchestra doing a Beethoven symphony, you know, because, oh wow, Beethoven 7, bam, we got to be there. Mm-hmm. Kind of growing up in this environment, but you know, I always kind of thought myself as going into the, you know, like as being a classical conductor until I got the job here as associate conductor. And between 95 and 2006, I worked with Jesus Lopez Cobos with the symphony and worked with Eric with the Pops, and so I was covering it all. And that was where I really became steeped in Pops orchestral traditions and to see what types of things, you know, where we could go from that. And I tell you what, I spent 11 years here working under Eric. And, you know, I always talk about taking lots of pages from the EK playbook, you know, and I'm constantly writing down, oh, this is a great idea, you know, and when I went off to Canada, you know, I used many of those pages from that playbook. But, you know, while I was here also for 11 years, I kept another little playbook of things that, you know, if I was in charge, I'd probably do that a little bit differently.
That's how Jason and I feel. Oh, no, sorry. I said that out loud.
Sorry, Carl.
And so it is kind of a miracle. I mean, is so often people say you can never go home. But when I got the call to come back, you know, I got those two playbooks, right arm and left hand, and jumped in and really haven't looked back.
What's the best thing you learned from him? The thing that kind of is like the overarching lesson that he taught you?
It's the joy of music making, the joy of having lots of people around you, you know, participating. I think his commitment to community was so very, very important. It made everyone feel as if this orchestra was theirs. And it didn't matter what part of town. Yep. It didn't matter if you like Broadway show tunes or if you like Dixieland jazz or you liked R&B or you like country western. The Pops was going to be for you because we're going to play it all. And we're going to play it with veracity and heart. And that was what Eric was all about.
I did want to ask you, there's been, you know, a big, you know, conversation in the music community. We're kind of fresh off Ann Sophie Mutter and somebody recording her. It was such right. a moment, and it did go international and really spark the conversation again. And I was able to go to the Rockettes over the weekend. It was an amazing experience. You know, they couldn't have been more clear. Do not take photos. And I was in a very good seat, and there weren't too many people in front of me, and yet everyone whipped out their camera and were taking pictures, and I could not believe it. I wanted to take pictures. That is just not something that you do. Are you just finding that? I mean, I couldn't – so many people were doing it.
Well, I believe that the live music experience is something so special. You know, obviously, we are in this whole new era of communication, of entertainment, where everyone entertain each other by taking pictures, sharing videos, or sitting anywhere to watch whatever show or to see whatever concert experience you want to. You can do it anywhere. And to me, the concert hall, music hall, is my church. Yeah. It's a sacred space where people gather to experience something together at the same time. And man, you've got to be in the room where it happens. Everyone is there together, and it's a sacred contract between us, our performers, and our audience members. It's a sacred contract between our audience members and one another, that we're all here to be raised up by the musical experience that we are all sharing here together. Oftentimes, I think of this word philharmonic. You know, I get this question all the time. What's the difference between a symphony orchestra and a philharmonic orchestra? Well, they're all the same. Philharmonic comes from the word philos, love, harmonic, harmony, lovers of harmony. And so all of us on stage, we love harmony because if we're not playing in harmony, it sounds bad.
Well, true.
So, but then there's the next level is the harmony which is on stage and the people in the audience and the harmony that happens between all of us within those four walls, the harmony that brings us all together. And then the third level is we all walk out into the world and we bring that sense of harmony with us. And it's that spiritual aspect that is so important. And by bringing in that inanimate object that takes some sort of electronic copy, it spoils the moment right there for all of us. And it really demeans that moment when it is shared in a form that wasn't like there in it. And so that's why, we want to bring everyone to concerts and to experience that thing together.
I agree with that. And when you go with people, we bring our son, we have season tickets and we bring our son, and I want to be in the moment with him and understanding how he's feeling it.
Right.
And like, you know, be present with him and with how he's feeling all of this music. And I do not want people taking pictures.
Well, okay. And so I'll play dad here. You know, the other thing, it's just like, you're at the dinner table. Those phones go away. No one looks at them. No one's texting, unless there's a family argument, and I say the word rutabaga. Then we can pull it out and figure out.
Oh, I know. You do. I know. You have the all magical knowing phone.
What architectural all right. style
That's
music hall really
too.
Is.
There I'm, you go. I'm not sure.
The smartphone thing, is that going to continue to be an issue in the orchestra world? Like,
well, again, I think it has been an issue for so long. But you know, I think more and more the classical music experience or the orchestral music experience, the music experience of gathering together is something that is becoming more and more unique. It's when people come together. And everyone is so cocooned in their relationships, in their entertainment choices. You know, even in movie theaters are getting so much smaller, right? You know, year after year. And so it's more than just listening to the music. It's coming together with a large group of people and sharing an experience. And that is becoming more and more unique. And we need to make it that very, very special place in time.
Put the dang phone down, folks.
All right. Even though you're on the phone all the time, but okay. It's part of the job. Jason and I are phone talkers.
Well, that's
at the right moment.
I know when to put it down, though.
You know, my wife is constantly telling me, John, are you on Facebook? Honey, this is for work. Social media, it's part of the thing.
you talked about the pops being, you know, everything to everyone and bringing all different kinds of music. You referenced earlier, you talked about tributes to African-American music. And you also have done the Classical Roots series.
Right.
Are you still doing that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm not going to be conducting it this year, but I'm associated with it forever.
Yes.
Our guest conductor actually this year for Classical Roots, Damon Gupton, he is our principal pops guest conductor, which is the very first time we've had such a position. Mm-hmm. And actually, he's like a real famous Hollywood actor. He's both an actor and a conductor. So he's going to be leading our Classical Roots concerts this year. But you know, it's so funny. You mentioned this thing about African-American music and it was Wynton Marsalis who said this, and it was like, oh, light bulb went off. You know, the fact is, it's not African-American music experience. Yeah. It's the American music
Correct.
Experience, which largely comes from the African music traditions that came here and have developed. And the more and more – and this is the beautiful thing about putting together Classical Roots concerts and the more research and the more people I meet and the more relationships we build, you find out how extraordinarily rich and diverse and it is the bedrock of American music.
Mm-hmm.
And it touches everything from country to bluegrass, rock and roll – jazz, blues, Broadway, it all comes from the African music experience here in the United States, and it makes us unique. Man, mm-hmm. you go anywhere in the world and you play American music and people are going to flip for it. I mean, last year I was just guest conducting the Suzhou Symphony Orchestra in Suzhou, China, just right outside of Shanghai. And it was a concert, you know, lots of light concert, you know, music. There was some Strauss waltzes and some Borodin and the Fledermaus Overture, all sorts of, you know, wonderful kind of old-timey kind of popular classics. And, you know, and everyone was very, very polite, clapped very, very lovely people. But man, for our encore, we did I Feel Good by James Brown, and the place frickin' exploded.
Love it.
And I've never felt so proud of being an American, of being able to share our music with the world, and to know that it brings such joy to everyone.
That's exciting. Yeah. That's cool.
It was very, and of course, doing the sweet potato there for those audiences. They like that one too. The mashed potato, there we go.
I mean, one of the things coming up for Pops is a tribute to King Records, which of course the city is, you know, preserving as for future generations right now. It's a big...
Oh my goodness. Thank goodness. Oh, you know, every time
it's unbelievable the condition and what was going on with it. That it's, you know, this city council and mayor are like, no, this was a huge effort on their part.
It was it was mammoth. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, driving up and down I-71 and you'd look over there and say, hold on.
I didn't even know it was there until this all came up.
Completely nondescript, right?
Yep.
But what happened there was so important. And you know what? It comes back to what we were talking about before, where you have someone like Sid Nathan, you know, as I love to quote, who didn't care about black and white. All he cared about was green. That's the American way.
Yes.
But, you know, it started off recording what was then called hillbilly music, which is, you know, kind of mountain music and of the very, very beginnings of bluegrass, folk music traditions. And then at the same time, he was recording what was then called race music, which had much music based on African folk music, gospel, some early blues, and those all of the artists for all of those recordings were singing in the same studio, and then they started rubbing elbows together, and you get the very beginnings of like rockabilly. And when you had black and white musicians in the same studio starting to create music together, it created something completely new. And of course, at the apex of it all was James Brown doing all of his recordings there at King, which brings it all together. So we got Paul Schaefer from
the David Letterman show.
And he's put together a fantastic rhythm section, joining the Pops. Rob Monzi, our Grammy-nominated arranger of Cincinnati Pops, a couple of outstanding singers, and we're doing it all. We're telling the story from the beginning of the Herzog Studio there on Race Street, to King Records, to the Isley Brothers, who kind of redefined what R&B was all about. And we're going to celebrate great American music making, because the Ohio Valley, right here, this place, is a fulcrum of American music. Bam!
When is that?
That's going to be in March.
I think.
So make sure, and that's another one. We only have two concerts for that. Get those tickets now. They make great holiday stocking stuffers.
That you work that right in there.
Yes, indeed.
All right. So this weekend with Pops coming up, Megan Hilty, Broadway, Glinda, the Good Witch, right?
Right.
And she played Dorley in 9 to 5. So, I mean,
she had her own like little Broadway career. It hadn't like really bust wide open. Kristen Chenoweth was supposed to perform here. This is years ago, and she got sick at the last minute, and so, you know, this unknown was asked to take her place, and everyone here in Cincinnati was like, "We paid tickets for Kristen Chenoweth. You know, who's this Megan Hilty?" And of course, then at the end of the concert, everyone's saying, "You know, Kristen who?" I mean, she knocked it out of the park, and she's been back several times. She is the biggest fan of Rosemary Clooney, and so she came back and did a whole Rosemary Clooney show with us a few years back. And for this one, for this concert, our Holiday Pops, we have a tribute to the film White Christmas. And so she's going to be singing Snow and Count Your Blessings and, of course, White Christmas.
Do you have a wish list of Broadway stars that you kind of send up the chain to the board and you're like, you're going to need to bring this person and this person?
You see them every year.
Okay.
I check them all off one at a time.
All right. So something else. Do you have any other questions?
I do not. And I'm very excited about your final question here. So I'm eagerly awaiting it.
You know, this from the very first time we went to the Pops, you know, this does stay with you. You are very well known for reading the very famous newspaper column, Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus. And I can think of no better time to ask newspaper questions and to get real facts from newspapers than right now. And so I was
beautiful. Thank you.
Hoping you would read that for us.
Oh, sure.
On September 21, 1897, the New York Sun published what was to become the most widely read letter to a newspaper. It was sent by 8-year-old Virginia O'Hanlon, who lived with her parents in Manhattan.
Dear editor, I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there is no Santa Claus. Papa says, if you see it in the Inquirer, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Signed, Virginia O'Hanlon. Here's Francis Church's response. Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except what they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be an adult's or a child's, are little. In this great universe of ours, a person is a mere insect, an ant in intellect, as compared with a boundless world about them, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of the truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished forever. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire people to watch all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? No one sees Santa Claus. But that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor adults can see. No one can conceive or imagine all the wonders that are unseen and unseeable in this world. For there is a veil covering the unseen world which not the strongest person nor the united strength of all the strongest people that ever lived could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, and romance can push aside that curtain and view the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Oh, Virginia, in this world there is nothing so real. There is nothing so abiding. No Santa Claus? Thank God he lives, and lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the very heart of childhood. Merry Christmas, Cincinnati.